He is Justin Davis, user experience designer and prolific polymorphist. And he is Aubrey Goodman, iOS and web services dev and titanium dev and everything. And cobbler of code, a code cobbler indeed. And this is a show that we call Distilled. Welcome in. And you can find us online if you want to. Follow me at JWD2A, the worst Twitter handle in the world, on Twitter, or you can follow Aubrey at Aubrey Goodman, a much more sensible Twitter handle. And you can find this podcast in any of the many dumpsters in downtown Tampa, or at Podomatic, or on iTunes, or wherever. Just search for Distilled. Yeah.
And if you want us to talk about anything in particular that we don't cover, you can always tweet hashtag distilled topics.
I need to check that, by the way. I haven't checked that in a while. But either way, so there we are. Welcome in here. It is June 12th.
1896,
that's right. No. And we are pontificating about electricity. No.
We're recording this on a daguerreotype, which is a hilarious thing because that's actually a photograph. No, we were just super, super high tech, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
record the audio. We took photographs with wax and we
wow,
record audio in a photo.
The show has already run completely off the rails, and yeah, and we're only 2 minutes into it. Which is really bad.
Well, it's because we're recording in a weird place.
It is kind of odd. We changed location a little bit. And orientation, and there are far too many chairs in this room.
Indeed.
For the number of people in the room, and that is a disconcerting and odd feeling, because it feels like there should be a lot of people, but there aren't.
It does. But there were over the weekend.
There were over the weekend, yes. we were discussing... what were we discussing? We were discussing... really software design pattern. Well, not kind of, sort of. We were just talking about before the show about JavaScript's class implementations.
Object-oriented JavaScript, as if that's a thing.
Right.
I mean, it's sort of a thing.
Sort of.
There's a way to sort of do it.
Yeah, it's confusing because like everything in JavaScript is an object. So you think, oh, of course it's object-oriented, mm-hmm. but it's not really object-oriented.
Oh, and we'll get to that. That's a gotcha.
In the way that
later.
Ruby and PHP and Python and C and about every other language under the sun that does logic-based stuff is, well, at least modern languages. I don't think COBOL was ever object-oriented. Or maybe it was. I don't know. What was the first object-oriented language? Do we know?
A, I think.
What?
The double precursor to C.
Really?
It was called A.
Was it really?
The very first, yeah, the first version. Here's a little history lesson for you folks.
Look at that. I never knew that.
C is called C because it came after A, which came after B. Or came after B, which came after A.
Wow.
I'm not really sure why they called it A or B. It was many, many years ago. It was in the 60s, I think.
Oh, here it
possibly
is.
Possibly the 50s.
According to Wikipedia, Simula.
Simula was the first computing language.
Considered the first object-oriented
program.
Right. Yeah. Smalltalk was supposed to be the first object-oriented.
Yeah, Smalltalk was going to be in my list.
Right, yeah.
Smalltalk and Objective-C are very similar.
Okay.
Smalltalk is actually the precursor to Objective-C.
Interesting.
Objective-C was modeled on Smalltalk. Right.
Very good.
Or maybe it was just a syntactic thing.
Yep. It's interesting. It must have been very difficult to come up with object orientation the first time. I mean, that's got to have been... It's such a bizarre theoretical concept. That,
is it, though? I mean it's not, seems so, so
It seems
obvious
so, so obvious
me.
Once you learn it and once you understand it. But to come up with it out of thin air, I mean, it's sort of like inventing the telephone, right? It's like...
Mm.
I don't know. I don't know. Simula. I need to learn Simula. That's going to be what my next app is in. Simula. Simula emulator. Simulator.
Simula.
Oh, that doesn't really work.
No.
Damn it.
Points off.
Shit. So anyway, yeah, that's that. So we were discussing
in the context. So there's object oriented languages in the context of Titanium, which uses Backbone, a JavaScript library, for its MVC layer.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's just the M part, really. Is it?
Right. It really only uses its backbone, the model implementation.
Models,
right?
And yeah. Collections.
I suppose so. Yeah.
But it doesn't.
Are there
use,
collections in
yes,
Titanium? Okay.
There are. I use them.
Gotcha. I should probably use them.
You should use
them. I probably am. I just forgot.
Forgot.
Yeah.
It's cool.
But it doesn't use the view. And one of the big problems, I think, with Titanium, and frankly, almost any JavaScript, well, that's probably not true. There are ways to work around this in Backbone and things like that, I think. But there are. Actually, I've done it. But in Titanium, you end up, especially if you're supporting in one project, if you're supporting multiple platforms, you have an iOS and Android platforms that are being supported, and it's in a single project. And what you've done is you've created namespace folders for specific views controllers, and that's sort of how you're achieving differentiation across the platforms. There is no really easy way to inherit from sort of parent views and things like that, right? So as an example, if you had, say, a login view that used the same input fields, same buttons, same forgot password link and all this kind of thing, but on iOS had something on the top of the screen, on Android had something on the bottom of the screen, you pretty much had to write that view twice.
Actually,
you don't.
Not.
You can actually use a require if you want to.
What's actually interesting, I gave a talk 2 years ago, I guess, about universal app design for iOS, spanning iPad and iPhone. And the same strategy that you use there also applies here. So, I mean, it can. You can, if you want, provide completely different implementations in those cases. And yes, a require would be a good way of, you know, implementing or including common code in that. You can design the controller so that it provides behavior that is common across both platforms. And then in the view layer, you provide shared IDs for all the various things, but you can assign, like in the Android TSS, that the layout should be this, but in the iOS TSS, the layout should be like this. What we're essentially doing is skinning each view for its respective platform.
Mm-hmm.
In the cases where it's a different implementation, maybe you want the toolbar at the top or the bottom, or, you know,
right.
One environment, you know, has menu bar and button, like Android has, you know, you can bring up a menu, and that could be where you have certain navigation elements, and you don't want those in the view, like in the view's layout. There are ways to do that where you can cobble that together. And in the controller, you can either do one of those if iOS, if Android, whatever,
yeah,
flat forks, or you can have a require that the require itself is namespaced, so that library is a specific thing that follows an interface contract. When I say interface contract, I mean the public method list that, I mean, and of course, everything in JavaScript is public, but the method list that is declared as, here are the things that I do. You can call get list of whatever, you can call repaint, you can call, you know, whatever the various functions are that are going to be called by the thing you're building that into.
Yeah.
And then the controller, the shared controller, just simply does a require.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't have to do a conditional require for this or that. You're actually providing platform-specific behavior in a namespaced file, whether it's a library in assets or a controller in app controllers, you know, or what have you.
Yeah.
But that way you don't have to do the if Android, if iOS.
Right, right. That's interesting.
One pattern I've used for sharing code.
Yeah.
We did this for the geofencing plugin for truck spotting. There is no geofencing capability built into Titanium, and especially backgrounding in Titanium has been a very interesting thing to learn about. There's a lot of little gotchas that maybe I'll touch on hopefully today. Where you think certain things will work the way that, you know, like, oh, you register this event and then it's cool, but nope, when you go into the background, Android is fine, but iOS backgrounding requires a separate registered service and everything else shuts down and only the service stuff is running. So blah, blah, blah. There are lots of good reasons for including these things as namespaced separate libraries, but you could also do what we ended up doing, which is move those into a module.
Yeah.
So you've added some experience with modules?
Not using modules. I think I was going to use the GeoLoki module once upon a time, and I ended up not.
Because it's now defunct and open sourced.
That's right.
And not what you want, by the way. I looked into it also.
But I haven't actually used modules a lot because I am not a developer in either the native code. I mean, either iOS or Java, right? Or Objective-C or Java. So for me, I haven't really dealt in modules, at least in creating them. Because I sort of would have to go figure out how the hell to build in those languages that I don't necessarily know.
You're like, I think this looks like Java code.
Yeah.
It sort of looks JavaScript, but I don't know what's class. I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
Private?
Yeah.
Protected? Private, what's that protected? Mean? Static? I don't...
Yeah. What the hell? Why are all these words? What does void mean? I don't understand void. Why is void in front of everything?
What about transient?
Transient
or volatile?
Oh god! See, this is the problem, you know.
And then there's that 15
strongly
years of Java
typed languages.
That I've
damn it!
Worked with.
Yeah. So no, I don't know much about modules. What do you know?
Well, I'm glad you should ask, Justin. I have built them now for both Android and iOS. They're very interesting. There's a Python script that you run that will generate. This is where it gets really fun, right? So Titanium uses a JavaScript and XML and a form of JSON to describe all of the various view controllers, models, etc. That all gets cobbled into JavaScript by a Python script.
Great.
And exported into an Xcode project and an Eclipse project, which are then compiled into their various binaries for their various platforms. So that's what, like four languages so far?
Yeah. Golly.
So yeah, there's a Titanium script that Python script that that you run to generate the module, and it generates all the whole project for you for various platforms. You make one for each platform.
Yep.
And when you do, it constructs everything for you, and when you're ready to build the module, you do exactly that. It's important, I should note here, that it's very, very important. Do not nest your source code inside of your Titanium project, the project that's going to include the module. Put them parallel, totally separate from each other, because they're really just different parallel, you know, siblings in the sense of your GitHub repository. You have your Titanium project for your app, you have a module for your iPhone, you have a module for your Android, and they'll all be three separate things, side by side.
Right, yeah.
one will include the other two.
Right.
Or at least the build products of the other two.
Right. But that module should be transferable to other projects, for example. I mean, it may or may not be.
Yeah, and it's just really confusing if you try, because that's what I did first. Because I thought, oh, I have a module that I'm nesting inside of this other thing. I need to include it here in the source. But no, don't do that. It's really, really, really not going to make your life easy. Because ultimately what you're going to do is in your created, in that generated code that the module code that it makes, for example, for iPhone, it's going to generate an Xcode project and some source code and whatever, and all the things that will basically build successfully from, with nothing, just basically with your names and, all that stuff in place. Then your job is to add the code on top of that that does something. But what's really interesting about this is what it does is it takes all of the methods that you have. It even calls it out with a pragma mark at the bottom of the code. Pragma mark is Objective-C, or I guess Xcode specific pound sign directive for the compiler. But it's for just documentation, basically, and navigation through the code with Xcode. But it's documenting, like, here's where your code should go for this. So it'll say, like, here's where your example code goes, your public interface methods, which is that interface contract I mentioned earlier. So what it's actually doing is it's taking these methods that you define, like get latitude, for example, and it's going to provide those as JavaScript methods in Titanium. Like, it'll generate from all your Xcode, like your Objective-C code, it'll generate JavaScript that matches those method names, so that when you call those methods in JavaScript, it'll pass the arguments through as arguments into the native world and process them. And you can do return values as well. So you could say, I want to get all registered regions in the geofence, which you can do on both platforms, but it's a different implementation to get there. So I can abstract with a module a get region parameter, a get region method, and it takes an argument, which is the name, the identifier name that I gave the region when I constructed it. And so since both platforms support that structure for geofencing, I can provide an implementation on both sides that says, I want to get the region, which comes back in JavaScript as an object, serialized and, type, stripped and all that, because Java and Objective-C have type, but JavaScript does not. So it just comes back as a raw object that you can just interrogate the, the fields that are part of that interface contract. This returns an object of this type. Here's a description of what the fields are that will map, and off you go.
Interesting.
Then it becomes a really simple thing once you compile your module, which you'll do by running the build script, buildpy, again a Python script that generates a zip file. You then import that zip file into the Titanium module's install process, the way you do for every other module, and then in your code you just have something var your module goes here. Use var geofence equals require tie dot truck spotting. And then we defined the modules are, tie dot truck spotting for both of them.
Have you published that module, that geofencing module, made that public?
No.
Open source?
No, not yet. I have to talk to the product owners and find out if that's something that they're open to.
Because,
it would be super valuable to anyone else who's using geofencing. And, we've talked about it as a revenue source possibility.
Because,
I mean, there's a lot of developers in Titanium land who would love to have that. And we were thinking of maybe incorporating it into the Titanium library directly and sending them a pull request. There's a lot of,
I'm actually surprised they don't support that out of the box. For whatever reason, I thought they did.
Yeah, I was surprised also.
Because I feel like I had seen somewhere in the doc, and I was just looking for it in the documentation, because I had sworn at one point I had seen something. There's geolocation. No, that's just getting your location.
No, that's actually just a module, the Titanium module, when you call tie.geolocation.
Right.
Dot whatever, that's provided by Titanium as a module.
Right.
So you can upgrade or, you know, modify that module if you want. You just have to go into their modules code and then fork that to change what you want and incorporate it into your Titanium installation. I mean, it's messy.
Yeah.
I guess if you just import the module that you have, that's your fork in your TIE app.
Yeah.
XML, that should be enough to override whatever the defaults are.
Yep.
But mileage may vary.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm just attempting to very quickly scan the the docs here, because there's this thing called geolocation.android.locationRule. Accuracy API name, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. Doesn't matter. Either way, I don't know. I thought that something existed, but it doesn't. So,
anyway. It doesn't. And I found a bunch of iOS implementations for like modules for that.
Yeah,
I saw some hacks that actually modified the Titanium code itself.
Yeah,
and you know, in that case, then it is just tie.geolocation.addEventListener exit region, enter region, that kind of stuff.
I'm curious why there is not a larger module ecosystem for Titanium yet. It seems to be a fairly widely used platform.
Yeah, I don't know. That's where I'm getting caught up in that. I thought so too, and I thought, you know, I would have more any kind of buzz, any kind of reaction at all from the community talking about Titanium,
yeah,
you know, out in the wild, Twitter and Facebook, and I've gotten exactly nothing. Nobody cares about Titanium, especially not around here. I mean, I go into, like, I went to there was a combination Ruby iOS meetup last week, talking about Helios, which is a pretty cool idea. It makes a Rails app from your core data model, and you build your Objective-C code. You know, you make your model local with core data, and then run Helios, and it follows all the changes you make over time. As like, once you get it into Helios, all you have to do is change core data, and Helios will automatically change your Ruby Rails app, and you know, provide an API for connecting, and provides a client library in the iOS space, and allegedly makes it very easy. Although, frankly, I was not impressed by the demo. I think it's great for, you know, just getting started, but if you're trying to build something that can handle like real time sync, it's not going to be good enough.
Not good. Yeah.
But that's a hard thing to do, and that's a topic for another time.
Yeah. It could, you know, because things like SpriteKit, you know, you were showing me a little something you made with using SpriteKit, and that may or may not remain mysterious until it's ready to go.
May or may not.
But and there's no SpriteKit implementation in Titanium yet, and I don't know if that's because it's really, really fucking difficult, or if just they never got around to it. Which I'd sort of rather them focus on code coverage, API coverage, than updates to Studio and update, you know, all these other things that seem a little bit superfluous, and their Node ACS stuff and all that kind of thing. But I guess that's just because I don't use ACS. I don't know. I mean, I feel like if you are the author of a hybrid framework that that's architected the way the Titanium is, that code coverage should be, or API coverage should be, the number one priority.
Yeah.
And they've done a really good job. I mean, there's no doubt about that.
They have. I guess the issue with SpriteKit is there's no analog in the Android world. There is,
right,
you know, there are libraries like Chipmunk and you know, Cocos in the Objective-C world that sort of provide similar things. There's Box2D, which is a nice collision detection and contact triggering library for JavaScript. So, you know, it's possible. But I think, you know, there's a lot of moving targets, and they're fanning out and not converging. They're diverging.
Yeah.
I think that's actually probably good. I'd like to see a lot more modules.
Yeah,
come out.
I think that would be good. I think that would be good because I think that what's interesting, too. Well, I don't know. This may not be the truth, but it's possible that because of the way that Titanium's abstracted away from the OS level by one degree, that the module app ecosystem allows you to come up with some pretty fascinating bits of functionality that may or may not really readily exist in the native implementations. I mean, that's probably not true. I'm trying to think if that would ever be true. I guess not, because anything you could do with the native, like, level, I don't know.
I wonder if they have, like, OpenGL support in a JavaScript library.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah.
I don't know, it's like WebGL, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I'm not sure. But,
because I was considering building a mysterious project.
Yes.
In JavaScript. In Titanium.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of SpriteKit.
I know, you should try to do it and just like to compare. You know? Just as a case study.
Why do it once when we could do it twice and learn something?
Absolutely. Or three times. Build it in Java on Android, build it in Objective-C on iOS, and then build it in Titanium and port to both, and then big-ass blog post.
Yeah. Book?
Or blog series, right. Yeah.
Book. Trying to make money
with
all this stuff here.
I know, right? I know. Does anybody sell blog posts? It seems like somebody should. You know, like, sell a blog post for 99 cents.
How does that work? Who's buying it?
I don't know, but I mean, people buy content all the time. People buy ebooks. People buy books. All a blog is a chunk of content that happens to be a little bit shorter. Why couldn't you sell it for a micropayment? I don't know.
I think the key is figuring out the micropayment.
Yeah.
How do you, like, the order fulfillment?
Yeah.
I think that's tricky. Because there's no iTunes for blogging.
Right. No.
Oh, but there could be.
There could be.
How much time we have?
Yeah.
Let's vamp on that for a minute.
Yeah.
What does that mean? Could that be like a PayPal integration? Is that like a Dwolla thing? Is that,
I mean,
like Venmo? How would you know that someone has paid for the content? You know what this is? CoinLock.
Yeah, it kind of...
We're describing CoinLock.
Yeah, in a way it is.
Digital order fulfillment.
The idea would be... You know what? Yeah. I think what... I think I would do that, and then I would embed the CoinLock stuff, kind of what CoinLock does, and...
Oh, it's genius. You can only watch or read this blog content if you pay with Bitcoin.
Right, and then, boom, all of a sudden now it shows it, right?
Yeah, and it could be like 0.001 BTC.
Right. Yeah, and you just unlock it. Boom.
There's your. Ooh. Or you could do. Oh, I like this. You could do ad-free content. Like the ads go away when you buy.
Oh, absolutely.
Like buy away the ads.
Yeah,
and they just disappear.
Buy position. I just want the right-hand ads to go away. I'm good with the left-hand ones. The banners are fine.
That's inline awesome. Ads that I don't like.
That's awesome. See, soon, if micropayments ever really start to work really well. And very efficiently. And frankly, Bitcoin is probably the best way to make it happen.
I think it's the only way.
Yeah. You know, maybe developers then could even start charging for features like forgot password.
it's like customer service right now. Like have you, like the first 5 minutes is free, but if you want to actually really solve your problem, they're going to charge you for an
absolutely.
Hour. And that's $100, and they're going to need your credit card before they proceed.
That's right.
Why not do that same thing with
Bitcoin? You could definitely do it.
For content.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I don't know why this just made me think of this, but I saw another startup that's doing the real-time pairing.
Real-time pairing?
Like, yeah, pairing, like, you know, code pairing. Like, I have a problem.
Pair with me.
Pair with me?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's another one that's doing that exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly like we were saying.
Yeah.
Exactly. Code editor in the browser so you can write code together and all that kind of thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
There it is.
Anyway, All right, well, you frittered away another 30 minutes of your day listening to this nonsense.
We hope you learned something. Thanks for listening, folks. That's right.
And even though Linda Olsen climbs to the top of the Sykes building and unhooks the bungee cord every time she hears us say it, this is a production from Tampa Bay Wave.
Adios.